Welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. My name is Austin Chadwick and my co-host is Chris Lucian. And I'm really excited today to have Matt Killer on the show. We've had the opportunity to mob with Matt for quite some time now. And I have to say, it's just been a ton of fun. I've learned so much and it's just been a great time mobbing with Matt. And we're going to be talking about a whole host of things, but we'll see where we end up going. But automation, refactoring, and mob throughput is up on the Kanban board, so to speak, and we'll see what we get to. But to kick us off, Matt, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a software developer. I've been one for about 5 or 6 years. Studied it in college after music and English did not go the way that I wanted them to go.
Right on. Well, I guess to jump right into it, automation. Yeah. So, I mean, that's one of the first things I learned about you is, you like to automate stuff. I've even heard some stories. So yeah, what makes you so passionate about automation?
The tedium of clicking around in confusion, is a drain, for everyone, I think. And I think especially on like mobbing teams, it's super useful use of our time. Because like then the bottleneck becomes like actual mechanical manipulation of the mouse and keyboard, which is like breathtakingly awful for a group of five people sitting around like staring at, anyway, so I think that's really it. Like when the bottleneck is an actual thought, that's when I start to get like upset and I start looking for options to remove that pain. So
yeah, that really resonates with me. I think just in general, in the past, whenever I've heard people in a mob say, hey, let's stop mobbing, it's usually because it's like repetitive related stuff, right? Like, and that, I get that question a lot, like, when is the right time to stop mobbing? And I usually throw back at them, Or especially if it's around some tedious repetitive task, right? And I say, well, can you automate that? Have you tried, right?
Right.
And it's kind of funny because in the past I had been mobbing, and due to some weird unfortunate constraints, we were not allowed to modify or to update the code in an automated way. So it was really a bizarre situation. And then we decided to stop mobbing and then we got back together, right? But in every other situation, we even said, we'd like to automate this and we were told no. And it's kind of an interesting story, but in that circumstance, it really taught me the importance of one, what you were talking about earlier about mobbing, if there's no thought to it, then mobbing feels horrendous, right? But if you're all thinking together, then it's really fun. And so I just totally agree with that sentiment. I think that, if everybody's engaged in the mob is engaged and engaging. And if no one is engaged, then people want to drift away from the mob because it feels very wasteful. And I don't think it's because unless you're forced not to automate things, I never really believe that a team needs to stop mobbing. A lot of the time, I think that decision is maybe a decision to not automate and instead leave and do things. So it's kind of opinionated, but
I'm surprised with your opinion, Chris, that you're for automation. I thought me and Matt would have to win you over for the next hour, because I've never heard you talk about.
I was ready to fight you.
Now, I think one thing that jumps out to me is I think every people comes into a team or mob with different perspective, but that's one thing that you both share in common after mobbing with both of you is when someone's not engaged or there's a problem, I think what are we not automating was not my first instinct. For me, I first go to like, oh, well, what is this person passionate? Or I go to like interpersonal stuff or something. But you're right. I mean, it may just be as simple as what are we not automating? And that's why we're not engaged. that's certainly fascinating.
People in a mob bail mentally, like they leave mentally, I think in two situations. One, it's when it's boring and repetitive, but you're still passing the keyboard around. And then the other situation is when their level of understanding is so far away from the work that it's impossible for them to engage on the content. And unless, you know, and then I think, so there's two opposite sides to it, right? The boring stuff, you just got to automate the boring stuff, right? And I think that there's a Python book out there that Matt really likes with that title. And then the other side of it is the interpersonal side of just being aware of where everyone's skill level is in the mob and making sure that you're bringing along people rather than, you know, abandoning them in the dust. And so they take the keyboard, they type what you say, they leave the keyboard, have no idea what's going on. They don't ask the questions. The team doesn't engage with them. And so I think those are the two situations, and they're like, you know, polar opposites. And I think both are valid and both need to be paid attention to.
Okay, cool. Right on. So maybe to get more concrete, we talk about automating stuff. Maybe let's start giving some examples of things you've automated or thing inside the mob or outside mobbing. So Matt, you got any that come to mind?
Yeah. I think the first thing that I ever automated was before I knew about like AWS or anything like that, I had online classes and through like the Blackboard UI, and it was really tedious to like, you know, find your way through it back when I was taking classes. And so what I did was, because I was taking all these classes where you had to like make online posts or engage in discussions or things like that, and those assignments would get posted kind of arbitrarily, I would have a Python script that would go through and just find like uncompleted assignments, you know, like that's like the only case that it was looking for, and then copy that into an email and then send it to me, and I would get the notification on my phone and I would be like, oh, I have to go do this. But it didn't seem like automation at the time. It seemed like a necessity. I think that was the first thing I remember ever automating, and there's a lot more, but Chris, do you remember the first thing you ever automated?
Oh man. I automated reading in college. So that was, you know, for those who know me, they'll see me reading by listening to a speed reader, listening and watching a speed reader. And so a similar story was just, I had tons and tons of content to get through in school, in a class. And so, you know, rather than reading it, I could switch to a speed reader, you know, reading it at maybe like 250 words a minute or something like that. I switched to a speed reader and slowly trained myself up to 500 words a minute. So I hadn't written a Python script around that, but that slowly became this open source thing that I maintain. But I'm trying to think of a simpler example. I think that's one of the good ones. But I also do a lot of like the clicking around and moving from item to item in different user interfaces and things like that too. So it's a good story. How about you, Austin?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this just shows my area of weakness. Automation and mobbing came hand in hand for me. So before it's so obvious at one point, you know, like, hey, I have so many years experience in software, and what does software do? It automates stuff. Right. But then to apply automation on the automation was like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? And so for me, all my examples are more recent. I you know, and I guess I'll just pull from one that wasn't my first, but one that me and Matt were involved in together, which was great to have his strength in that, is that, you know, mobbing, we would be working on things that are, as Chris was talking about, high collaboration, takes all the minds working on it, and, you know, custom logic and that kind of thing for features or experiments and that. And but then every week we would have this manual clicking time as a mob, where we were just clicking through to gather information, put in an email and send it out because people needed this information. And I think it was Matt and other people in the mob were kind of like, what are we doing? And very kind words, you know what I mean? And so, one kind of cool pattern that kind of arose from that was, I think two kind of came from that. And maybe I'll let Matt speak to some of them here in a second. But One was the seeing Adam taking the scout rule mindset to automation, right? And so that when anytime you find yourself personally or in a mob or a team doing something manual, this would be great if it was automated. Oh, well, that will be a huge effort to automate it. Well, how can I automate it just a little bit every time I'm doing this manual thing? And so I don't know, Matt, what were some of the things we started to do to automate that status reporting?
Oh man, I just have to say that was such a great idea. Because it like then, I mean, at least for me, when the tedious stuff came up, I actually found my engagement like super high as opposed to like even a week before, because I was like, oh, well, like while we're doing this tedious thing, we can have a conversation about how we can stop doing this and like move it forward. Did you want like specific tech details on how we did that or just like,
sure. Yeah.
So we used PyAuto GUI. It's one of my favorites because I think that there is a super clear path towards a fully automated product in like a couple of hours using it. And it's not pretty and it's not perfect, but it gets the job done. And I think that's what automation is all about for me. So we use PyAuto GUI and we had it authenticate stuff and go and grab pictures from draw.io, which we use for our diagrams. We had it navigate through the file. Wow, totally blanking. Anyway, we had it navigate through the file structure in the computer and like attach things to emails and send it to the people that we needed. And yeah, now it's great because when we do that status report, you just run the Python script and then, you know, you look at something else for the 30 seconds that it takes to do it all. And rather than like taking 5 minutes, like going to the wrong website, like, oh no, we moved it over here. And I think that's another great thing about automation is that it really removes a lot of tribal knowledge. If you have like, I mean, something as trivial as a URL in there or something like that. Because then if someone leaves the team, at least the incoming team or incoming team members can look at the script and say, okay, well, they were going to this URL, so I guess there's something here that we need. Which is a better conversation to have with the exiting team member than what do we do?
That reminds me of a situation that I was in maybe 4 years ago or so, where there was somebody from kind of another organization within our company that was asking for Gantt charts, like historic looking Gantt charts. And so, and Gantt charts can be tedious to make if you don't, you know, create them up front or whatever. And so one thing I had made a Python script for was just to draw a Gantt chart based off of the delta between commit histories of Gherkin. And so there's another open source project that I have out there called Gherkin to Gantt. And what it does is it takes Gherkin files, AAT files, and converts them into historically looking Gantt charts for features. And so that was really nice to be able to kind of broadcast out to everybody, like, hey, you can go look at a real-time updated Gantt chart every day if you really want it. and then I never looked at it again. And so it was a pretty big victory, and it was simple enough to do. And I think specifically in Python, there are image libraries. In fact, I would use SVGs now, but back then it was just kind of coming out as a JPEG or whatever. But the point being is that, you know, status reporting seems like something that you can't really do, but if you have, you know, the pieces that are like near code descriptions of your features, like describe it blocks or Gherkin scenarios, you can definitely just, you know, pull that in, parse those files and go through. It's been pretty neat.
And a couple of things I picked up on from what both of you said, and it kind of comes back to that scouting automation thing, right? Is I think for one, just get started, right? It doesn't matter if you have the cleanest code or if it works perfectly. Like I think I had a heartburn from previous encounters with test automation in the form of something like PyAuto GUI. Like if something like that's running in your pipeline and it's flaky, I had bad experiences with that. And so I think when someone mentioned that at first, I'm kind of like, oh man, there's a lot of problems with that. But look, you know, poorly, you know, maybe if it's poorly written, you know, flaky automation is better than doing it manually, right? So, and you always can, and that's where the scouting part of it, I think is such like a nice compromise win because, okay, we have to get this work done. So we're doing it manually, but every time we have to do it manually, we scout it. So whether that means we automate one more piece of it, we identify a way to make it less flaky. Maybe instead of clicking on the screen, we find the API to interact with the third-party tool directly in a less flaky way. Maybe we clean up the code. Maybe we add unit tests, you know. But whatever it is, it's always better just to start as opposed to being like, ah, I need the perfect automation solution for this, right? And I think one thing that Matt really brought was when we were localizing certain parts of the app to be in multiple languages, you know, I think it kind of turned into, and this is another pattern that's come up, is kind of the splinter automation pattern, right? And so if two people are working on a thing, maybe someone splits off and automates it, or what we've done more often, I think, is if it's literally a manual tedious task that's not like high risk, one person will do it and they're all still in the same call, but there's two people pairing on the automated solution. And I think we saw that happen where we were doing it manually. And then once the pair with Matt came up with the automation, now it's just like, why not run it? You know what I mean? There's no reason not to. And then as we touched it, we added more unit tests and other things as we went. But so maybe it's just a call to action. Just try, just do it. and don't be hesitant like I was.
The first mobbing timer was kind of created that way, where it was, it wasn't like a tedious manual task, but it was just a really annoying alarm that was loud and everybody hated. And so the idea kind of blanking out the screen kind of came to me, and you know, I just told the team like, hang on, I'm going to go work on something for a little while. Came back and said, install this on the machine and start up the timer. And I remember the very first person to get blocked out by the timer screen was just shocked that they couldn't type anymore. And I look back on that and I'm like, man, that was a little bit cruel, but it was a really interesting like side effect of the whole thing. And then you know, things became silent and we rotated at the keyboard, which were the goals. And so it was just kind of a funny thing of like, you know, that whole splinter pattern is not necessarily, you know, you can just solve these minor problems for the team that are just really irritating that you can kind of, you know, save the team from eventually, right?
Yeah. And I think you've said it on the show before, Chris, but there's something cathartic about lean. So I think emotion ties in pretty quickly here. So I know Matt's impact on the mob of doing automation has brought me happiness. Have you ever seen the impact of your automation on someone's life in a more positive way? If you have any examples, I'll just throw it out to you guys to share.
Yes, I had, well, still have a friend who was working a job out of college and it was essentially just a data entry on different web pages. Go to this website, log in with this like 12345 password, like, and to an admin account and put in this piece of data and then close that, go to another web page and do that. And it was just like, so I was watching her do it and I was like, no, this is horrible.
Stop. Yeah.
And especially for someone like her, who's like, she just didn't really use computers that much growing up or in college even. And so it was just like, you know, and she was doing like the pecking typing, and I was like, oh, we gotta do something about this. And so I started working on a Python script that essentially just did a lot of the tedium of that job for her. It didn't like make any, you know, complex decisions or anything like that. It was just like bare bones data entry, like logging into these unsecured websites with unsecure passwords. So I didn't like feel the need to encrypt them or do anything crazy because it was like the passwords 12345. Like anyway, yeah. And so that was working for a while, but she left that job shortly after we'd completed work on it. But it made her happier. And I think that's a big part of automation, like Austin just said. It's like, even if it fails, at least you're having more fun and you're essentially creating more productivity. So very few downsides.
Yeah, I mean, there's a point to that of like, if people are stuck doing kind of boring, uninteresting things, then it makes them, you know, upset or brings them sorrow in some kind. So there's this larger case of, you know, the progress of automation and increasing, you know, the more that's automated, the more that a single person can accomplish, you know, given an amount of their time. And so it works well.
And I think there's something, you know, life is short, and humans, we are very capable of, you know, awesome things like interacting with, you know, investing in people, thinking through tough problems. And any point a human is doing, you know, like take text over here, go to this web page, input it in, you know what I mean? Like very, I think there's, it might be strong to say dehumanizing about it, but there's an aspect where like, there seems like a fuller way to live, right? you know, there seems like your capacity is bigger than this, you know what I mean? And you could be having a positive impact while something like a computer does this, right? And so I guess maybe my next question that I'm interested in from you guys is, not everyone always wants the automation, right? And so when there's certain contexts where that's a risky proposition, right? Or they might see it as you're automating away my job. Like what are ways to bring that up in a more sensitive context and encourage people to experiment with it, I suppose?
Chris, I'll defer to you as the first
one. Yeah.
It's a toughie.
Yeah, it is obviously a difficult thing, and there's definitely kind of an ethics discussion around it. You know, my personal opinion is the more we automate, the more we can do. And so I'm kind of one of those, maybe a little bit of a futurist in the sense that I think we can automate most, if not all things. And then, you know, you have the results of, there's a book called A Player of Games, and it depicts a world where people are kind of enjoying the fruits of automation, you know, and the people kind of live a completely different way than we live now, kind of finding personal fulfillment rather than you know, finding themselves in tedious work because they can't afford to do whatever, right? Like everybody can afford whatever they need to, and it's really kind of to whatever their desires are to kind of like go out. And I kind of see, so really automation in the end is going to end up in like the Star Trek kind of world where you're exploring space and you're like doing things and automation is helping you everywhere, or it's going to be in the Terminator sort of world. So I tell people Star Trek or Terminator, pick one. And so, and if people become disinterested in automation, this might be a really extreme theory, and I'd be happy to entertain comments on Twitter. You know, the Star Trek or Terminator kind of thought, and I think I heard this from somewhere else. I don't think I originated that term, but I can't remember where I got that from. It's really like if good people aren't behind the automation when the automation is created, then we're almost certainly going to end up in Terminator land. And so I think, you know, again, grandiose and extreme opinion here. I think everybody should be kind of influencing and driving forward the automation piece and being involved every step of the way, especially for the people that really understand it and have a very strong moral compass. You know, those are the people that should be involved in the creation of the AI, because the AI will, you know, get created no matter what. So automation, you know, I say AI, but you know, you kind of like extrapolate from there, right? Because eventually we are going to be making tough decisions, you know, like the decision engine from MIT choosing, you know, if a car is driving toward people, should it choose, you know, to, and has no choice but to slightly turn its wheels, and it can hit A or B, and who is in A and who is in B, and has to decide who lives or dies. you know, that question will ultimately always be posed to the machine eventually, right? I don't think there's any avoiding it. So really, again, morals and ethics need to be involved. And so that's a very large extrapolation from what the question you asked. But you know, I fundamentally believe that all the way through. Like, I don't believe that we should stop automating because it you know, there's an ethical question of where that work goes if it pulls work away from people or something like that, right? But I don't think at any point you say stop it. I think you fix the system around it, and that's where systems like universal basic income and things come into play. So, but I've probably revealed way too much politically, so I'll just stop there.
Nice. No, go ahead, Matt. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say I think that is a super interesting thought, because like there's a huge moral dilemma if like there's this huge workforce of, I mean, let's just take like car manufacturing, and there's like, let's say the average age of like a car manufacturer is like 55 in this world that I'm creating right now. And then, so they're like 10 years out from retirement, and then all of a sudden, like all of their jobs are automated, and like, it's going to be super hard to re-enter the workforce at the same level that you were at, because like now no one wants you because you're just a more expensive version of this robot. And yeah, I don't know the answer to it though.
So. I think like everything we say, right, it varies on context. And I think what you bring to the table is, wow, there's this awesome thing called automation, but also, as Chris and Matt are hinting at, there's this thing called kindness, consideration, respect, and, you know, people. And and I love that it kind of took a philosophy turn, because that's a passion of mine. But it reminds me of a lot of C.S. Lewis's space trilogy books, where it's kind of this dilemma of, yes, the technology and the automation comes to fruition, but who decides what it does, right? And were they good people? And did they use it for good ends and good means and that kind of thing? And so I think, as with anything, it's not like it's just, hey, produce software and, you know, be a jerk. You know, it's kind of like, hey, you know, all the virtues of the mob virtues we talked about in the show, kindness, consideration, respect, vulnerability, trust, psychological safety, all those things come to bear. It's just not pure automation all the way to the end, you know?
Yeah, and absolutely. If you want a movie recommendation real quick, based on that last thing, Moon with Sam Rockwell is, if you want to have a good cry and think about automation and cruelty and that whole dilemma, then yeah, I think that's a good movie.
Nice. Yeah. And I think it's also context specific, right? It's hard for us to speak in you know absolutes about automation and things like that. You'll know in your context where automation is appropriate and where it's not, and you know, experiment, inspect, adapt, yeah. As with everything.
you need to, you know, so the goal really is to minimize suffering, right? And so what we're talking about, this whole conversation has been about minimizing suffering, right? Like if you go back to the very beginning and you're saying, hey, I need to automate the emails of my incomplete assignments so that I know when to do them, like that's minimizing suffering, right? Like you're minimizing your suffering, right? And then you go farther and farther down the line of automation. Now you have AI, machine learning kind of deciding for you, right? And so if you still have the goal of minimizing suffering, but like jobs are lost due to automation, now you're not automating to minimize suffering, you're passing legislation to minimize suffering, right? And so like automation like gets you some of the way there, then, you know, there are certain things that just won't work, like not hiring people is not going to be an option. And so from there, you know, unless you have some alternative to hiring people, and then going forward, and then it likely becomes even more automation. But, you know, kind of going down the extremes right now, or maybe the cutting edge of this, you know, the GPT-3 open AI project, and Google's rebuttal to that project with a, you know, 10 times bigger version of that same AI, or a similar AI, And now we're really talking about it's going to be kind of an exponential thing from here. And so fundamentally, I think there will need to be some reform within probably the next 10 years or so about what happens in these situations when large portions of systems are automated out, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think if you are like me and you are not bent towards automation, it's good to find teammates who are, because I can't imagine it shouldn't surprise me anymore, but there's been so many times where Chris or Matt will suggest something to automate and I'm like, whoa, we could automate that, you know what I mean? Or I joke with Chris a lot, like we'll find some information posted somewhere and I'm always like, I used to be surprised when I found out it was automated, but now I'm just like, oh, I have to find out anything that has Chris's name on it. Was it a bot that did it, or was it really Chris? I'm not sure yet, you know?
So my goal is to be entirely ambiguous between myself and all of the scripts that are running on my machine. And it works pretty well, yeah.
But I guess what I'm trying to say is it's good to surround yourself, and that's probably why it's one of the mob programming roles, with someone of that mindset, because you'll find value of ways to limit or end suffering in many ways by having automationists like Matt and Chris. So
the goal, you know, in the end, the goal should be to reduce suffering, I think. And in that, because while there is suffering, right? So like it'll be reduce suffering and then bring up prosperity, increase prosperity, right? So like you reduce suffering until you can find no more ways to reduce suffering, and then you increase prosperity beyond that. And that's the Star Trek storyline, right? But like if you take it the other way and you go down the Skynet route, right, you find ways to increase suffering until there is the singularity, and then from the singularity you obliterate, right? Like so there's these two opposite sides of this coin, Scott, way too nerdy, but you know, it's good. This took a completely different direction than I thought it would.
Fantastic. That's exactly what we want to do. Well, maybe before we close, I had one more question for both of you, which was to get like practical and next step. And like, you know, we've talked about the future and beyond reaching far, but maybe to stretch maybe a little less far than the future, but what's like your next automation experiment, or what's your next like automation stretch goal, if you had one? I mean, for me personally, it's just to be around people like you so I can learn more about it. could be learning. It could be something you're going to try. I don't know. I'm just interested.
Anytime I've ever set my mind to automating something, I've done it. So I really think that I'm just looking for larger and larger like time sinks or pain points to aim that drive at. In personal life or at work. So I don't have anything specific. I really wanted to learn more about PowerShell and Bash scripting, but after some conversations with Chris, I think that Python is much more maintainable in the long term. Although like the shell and Bash stuff is like, I mean, you can't really get around it. Like you have to incorporate that in some way. So I guess like, low level, more bash and shell, high level, find a worthy adversary.
Nice.
We, Matt, you and I need to do some machine learning stuff, I think.
That would be awesome. Well,
yeah, so really it's you know, automating the decision-making, right, is kind of next. Cause like, you know, so I agree with Matt. Like when I set out to automate something, you know, usually it kind of goes smoothly. It takes multiple iterations, you know, but, you know, we have software in order to click through user interfaces. We have software to make, you know, really minor decisions for us based on set rules. But really it comes down to fuzzy logic, statistics, and decision-making based on optimal outputs, right? And so, you know, for me, you know, if I can automate away everything I do day to day, then I can set my mind to something new. And so, you know, that's kind of how I think about it. So the the forward progression of where I am now is automating more and more of my decisions away. And I do think that GPT-3 has a very strong influence on this. It's a very robust AI right now. One thing that GPT-3 could do is you could say, draft me an email of that sounds sensitive, but gives this feedback. And GPT-3 will write the whole thing out for you. And so I think that that's kind of a little bit, I think email is so hard to be understood in. And I think that GPT-3 could reduce more miscommunication between people by wording things in such a way that it's sensitive. And I think it GPT-3 knows how to best sound sensitive in an email over people at this point. And so I'm, that's something where I'm going to, one thing I might, so like Austin said, he's not going to know if I'm emailing him or GPT-3 is. That might be my next little lofty experiment from here.
Yeah. And that's fascinating. I have learning to do. And we'll probably put links in the show notes for these things. I don't know what GPT-3 is, but I think I thought of mine. And I think it kind of hit one topic we said we'd get to, but didn't really get to, which is refactoring, which is, I think a lot of automation, for example, like a pipeline in one sense is automating delivery, which was a manual step for, it still is for many people and was for many teams. But I think kind of, hopefully not to get into a language war, certain languages that have been mentioned earlier in this episode are easier to write readably and cleanly with unit tests than other ones. and so I think that's something, maybe it's like the nose and the automation is working together in a mob, is to whatever automation is going on to make it clean and readable. Because as Matt was saying, it is a form of documentation, right? And so how do we deliver? Oh, we look at the pipeline. That's how we deliver our app to production. How do we test? Oh, you look at the test scripts. And if you go to look, and so I've seen two different versions of automation, and some automation is like, wow, the output is incredible and I love what it's doing. And then you go to read what it's doing and you're like, oh my gosh, I have no idea how this works, or it's so hard to understand what's going on, or it's so fragile. I touch it and this thing that our whole app, delivery from development to test to production is a really critical move, but it has no unit tests or it has no safety or, things like that, or it's not readable. That's kind of scary, right? And so I think while unless you're automating the automation of the automation, at least in some cases, clean automation matters. So maybe that's my stretch goal, is to partner with an automationist to make it cleaner.
I think eventually we will only be writing the unit tests, because the production code will be written by the evolutionary algorithms. So that's another thing that it's accelerating right now. And so I think that there are a lot of examples out there right now where people just write the tests, but the production code just appears afterwards. And then there's other examples of, there's a product out there called Tab9 that will write remaining sections of code based off of what it's learned about your code base already. So I also see that it goes farther and farther into that, right? So you'd be writing the unit tests, then you might only be writing the production knowledge, then you might only be saying, hey, create a accounting application for me that takes into account all of 2021's tax laws, and then it just dumps it out for you. And so people have to realize, like, it's not only going to be every other job, like it's also going to be software development that'll be automated as well.
Yeah. And it's things like that you get to hear, when you, work with Chris. So I just remember.
But it's okay, because there'll be something else to do. So.
I come home, well, this is what Chris said is going to be automated today. Yeah. No, I'm kidding with you. Yeah, it's inspiring, cool stuff. So I think we're coming to an end. Is there anything you'd like to share or plug, Matt, before we close?
No, Python's a good language. You should learn that. You should also look more into machine learning. I'm going to do that with Chris probably as soon as we get off this call. And No, yeah. I'm plugging the show. What a great show. Thank you for having me on. It's been great.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt. We'll put a link to the show in the show notes.
Perfect. That's there you go.
No. We're going to have a bot that's going to put a link to the show in the show notes.
Okay. Yeah. I'll start working on it right now.
All right. Well, with that, like and subscribe. And please give us feedback on YouTube, Twitter, and more. We love hearing your feedback. For people having the show, what you like. And otherwise, mob well, automate well. Automate well with kindness, consideration, respect. And have a good one. See you later, everybody.
Bye.